this does not fit your worldview. This does not fit evolutionary theory. This has the potential to completely erode the whole evolutionary timeline.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. This is Real Science Radio. I'm Fred Williams.
And I'm Doug McBurney. Fred, today we are talking about one of our favorite, all-time favorite subjects here at Real Science Radio. Dinosaurs, of course. That's everybody's favorite. But more than dinosaurs, collagen. Possible original biological material. Fred, I've pretty much ditched the possible at this point. Original biological material and the growing list. It's not a glowing list, Fred. It's a growing list. Although you might think of it as a glowing list of, Fred, discoveries that continue to just blow gaping holes in the millions and millions of years story.
Yeah, and that's right. So this subject is especially timely for us because Real Science Radio just released our new book, the second in the RSR teaching series, The List of Not So Old Things. You can go to store.rsr.org and pick that book up. It's brand new. The first two chapters are dedicated to dinosaurs. Chapter one begins with the dinosaur soft tissue discoveries. And we thought, hey, we're going to come right out of the gate with what we think is one of the number one things to hit this deep time narrative with. And then chapter two looks at stuff we've known for a long time, all this evidence for dinosaurs and man living together. And so these topics have fascinated creationists for decades. And they keep getting stronger, Doug, as more discoveries come to light.
That's right, Fred. I remember in fourth grade, fifth grade, sixth grade, seventh, eighth, ninth, 10, 11, 12th grade, I was taught that all the fossils are millions or tens of millions of years old. And they were all stone, of course. And any natural biological material would be long gone. But then, I believe it was in the 1990s, Fred. It's astonishing that this is almost 30 years ago now. The reports came in of stretchy tissue and blood vessel-like structures and cells and collagen and other biomaterials in dinosaur fossils, like almost 30 years ago, Fred. And then once you start looking at these discoveries in detail, it's no longer like a tiny footnote. They feel like sirens going off.
Exactly. And, you know, what we appreciate about these discoveries is it's not merely a creationist talking point. These discoveries have been discussed and covered in mainstream scientific literature for years. And, you know, big institutions are on board. Stanford, Harvard. Doug, are those creationist organizations? The CRS of Harvard?
Yeah. Oh, Harvard yeah. Used to be, but
it
yeah,
used
no.
to be. Yeah. Stanford probably also. So the question is whether the standard explanations are really adequate. And, you know, can fragile biological material survive for tens of millions of years? Or are these fossils much younger than the evolutionary timeline requires?
That's right, Fred. And so with any luck, we'll continue. And our efforts, Fred, it might even one day make it into the pulpits of mainstream evangelical and, hold the phones, maybe even Catholic churches. Right. And that brings us to today's guest because, Fred, in order to crack the evangelical churches and to crack the Catholics, what we need is to make a movie about this because everybody loves a movie. That brings us to today's guest, Logan Kieswetter from Genesis Apologetics. Logan is working on a new documentary, a movie, that just might get everybody's attention. Logan recently sent us a sneak peek, Fred. You and I saw it. We were allowed to sneak and peek behind the curtain. All about the project, including some footage from a Texas trip with Dr. Brian Thomas, Clay Turner. I don't want to give it away. I know they examined a T-Rex bone under the microscope. Fred, am I able to say more?
Well, they observed a blood vessel in situ, but, you know, I want to find out what does this exactly mean, and we've got the expert to tell us. So we've got Logan Kieswetter with us from Genesis Apologetics, who's doing a documentary on this, and he's been talking with all the experts. So, Logan, fill us in. What's the big deal with in situ and all this good stuff with blood vessels?
Well, it is amazing. And thank you so much, Fred and Doug, for having me on. So the reason why this is a big deal is the fact that Dr. Brian Thomas, when we were in the laboratory, expressed something that just blew me away as a filmmaker. He had never seen this before. He had seen only one example of it thus far in the scientific literature. There might be others, but to his knowledge, there was only one example of this in the scientific literature. And so when we got this thin section T-Rex bone from Montana under the microscope, we were looking at it. The fact that there is what appears to be a blood vessel in situ is a huge deal, because most of the time when you see blood vessels related to dinosaurs, Mary Schweitzer's famous, you know, T-Rex blood vessels, things of that nature, it's dissolved away from the bone. The bone has been dissolved away. This vessel-like structure is floating around in solution. This potential blood vessel is in situ, meaning in situation, in the bone itself, right where it should be. And that's profound, because like I said, Dr. Thomas has only seen this one time mentioned in the scientific literature. And so this was the first time he had ever seen it in person. It was the first time the lab tech there, Clay Turner, had ever seen it in person. Finding a blood vessel in situ is essentially like striking gold, because the likelihood that this is endogenous, that this is original to the creature, is just astronomically stronger when you can find the actual thing in the place where it's supposed to be. So that's why this was so amazing.
Oh, and so that's what you mean by in situ.
Yes,
and
sir.
Just, I want to just help the audience. The difference between guys like Fred and me and a guy like Brian is that Brian is actually working with the scientists to make the documentary. So he has to say in situ, like the Latin. Fred and I say in situ because we think we're like cutting the word situation in half, which really we are. Well, maybe we should play the video, because if we talk about it and I try to give my take on what I saw and how they reacted, what you just said about the odds of it being endogenous are astronomically better. Anyway, I think if you watch the live video, it's stronger than even that. Just based on the reaction of men who have looked at such things through such instruments for many, 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 many years. You can't fake this. Are we going to play the video? Maybe I'm allowed to give that away.
Yeah, I think so. Logan has sent us a sneak peek into this documentary. Let's run that clip.
Oh, wow. See that?
It looks like there are osteocytes within the lacuna.
Yeah, this is just amazing, the level of preservation.
Whenever an osteocyte's well-preserved, you'll see some of the filopodia or these little fibers coming off of them. This is amazing.
I bet if we dissolve this, you'd see actual cells come right out into the solution.
Lots of them, lots
of them. We can't say until we do. We haven't even done the cross-polarized light yet. This right. is great.
Right.
Wow. How many people in the world have seen dinosaur blood vessels in situ? In
Not
situation,
many. Not
right
many.
In the bone. We've seen them, you know, floating in solution because you've dissolved away the mineral part. And that's what we have on this slide right over here. But in situ? Wow.
No.
At this center, we get to see it on this day.
Mm-hmm. At many places, if they have to send off for it, they'll go ahead and get this down to like a, 80 or 60 or 40 microns.
And you can see through the bone, but by then, anything that's thicker than that just kind of goes. If this is a blood vessel, we've polished away some as it is.
Good point.
Ka-chow!
Yeah, this is information that would have just been polished off, and nobody would have known. Nobody would have known it was there.
All right, are you ready for cross-polars?
Let's do.
Back in the other setting, this was black, and that means your polarizers are crossed. All the light waves going this way get caught in the first filter, and then all the remaining light waves that are going this way get caught in the second polarizer, which is this guy here. First one's below the sample, second one's above the sample.
Right.
Any light that makes it through this second polarizer has been twisted by the sample itself so that it is now oriented so that it can pass through that second upper polarizer. And what do we know from fresh normal bone? The only thing that twists light that way is?
Collagen.
Collagen in the bone. Mm-hmm. So we have collagen in this bone, if indeed it turns colors. I don't know, but this is looking pretty good. So I'm looking for this part here where it's bright yellow, gold, are gonna turn blue, maybe. Oh my word.
Now that was amazing. So Logan, what's going on?
Yeah, so like I said, this was really powerful. So to kind of set the context, like we were kind of setting up, you know, earlier on in the episode here at the beginning, we're making a brand new documentary film on dinosaur soft tissue and the possibility of dinosaur DNA. We want to cover this topic from every single angle possible. We want to talk about the actual biomaterials, what types of biomaterials have been found, because as you guys know, as Bob had created a list originally with Dr. Brian Thomas trying to amass the types of biomaterials and how prevalent they were becoming within secular academia, within peer-reviewed scientific journals. We now have over 130 secular peer-reviewed scientific journals publishing 16 different types of biomaterials coming out of dinosaur fossils and other fossils that are claimed on the evolutionary timeline to be millions of years old, tens of millions to hundreds of millions of years old, in some cases upwards of almost half a billion years old. And so the question is, how can these fragile biomaterials last for that long? We have really good indication scientifically, empirically, of what the decay rates of these biomaterials are. And we know they can only last for thousands of years. So this is a huge blow to the evolutionary timeline, to evolutionary theory. So we want to talk about that. We want to talk about what types of biomaterials have been found, how old the evolutionists say they are, go over the empirical studies, both that have already been done and new ones that are being done by creationists, to verify the decay rates of these biomaterials and point to how robust those decay rates are. And in doing so, we can powerfully say these materials can only last for thousands of years. The other thing we're wanting to do is we're wanting to refute evolutionary rescuing devices, because the evolutionists have to say something, right? They can't just give up their whole worldview, their whole philosophy. They can't look at what the evidence is actually saying and take it at face value. That is that you're basically asking them to turn their whole world upside down. And so they've proposed a number of different ideas, theories of how these biomaterials can last for millions of years. Creationists have long refuted these. You guys have presented that evidence. You guys have presented that information. Other scientists, Dr. Brian Thomas, the various different scientists we're talking to, Dr. Joel Brown, they've offered powerful rebuttals. There's even evolutionists who are pointing out the problems with some of these potential rescuing devices. But we wanted to take it head on, and we wanted to actually talk about those, talk about the refutations, and also, this is the really cool thing, share some brand new empirical studies, experiments that refute those rescuing devices even further, to a degree where, just honest, there's some things I can say and there's some things I can't say.
Well, that's okay. I like what you just said, because refute them to the point where you just mentioned turning people's world upside down. We're asking them to do that, yes. In fact, if I remember correctly, and this is like a Bible quiz, Paul was actually accused of doing just that, of turning the world upside down. And I think it was by the idol makers, like the silversmith in Ephesus. But I want our homeschool students in the audience to check me on that. I don't have a Bible open right now. I'm going just off memory. But was that at Ephesus? Was it the
Alexander, I think it was Ephesus.
The coppersmith. Was it the silversmith or the coppersmith? But yes, Logan, we are asking the evolutionists, the atheists, the alleged atheists, to turn their entire worldview upside down. That's the whole point, right? Is to point them to the cross and to get people saved. And one of the ways to do that is to just start putting some chinks in that armor that they've put around themselves. One of the biggest ones and thickest ones being this idea that the universe is millions and billions of years old, and that the dinosaurs lived millions and millions of years ago. The soft tissue that we just saw in the video, the little slices, I don't know. I don't know how anyone, any rational person, can watch that and not understand exactly what that is intuitively and almost immediately. Man, that was amazing.
Yes, and the part that you didn't get to see as the video continues, because we were there for hours that day. And what was really funny is we just went in there. So part of this film also, we want to show creationists doing real science, because there's this crazy myth out there that creationists don't do real science. You guys aren't real scientists. That's a bunch of baloney. And I say that vehemently and with confidence, because I have spent hours with these guys. They do real science. They do it to a degree that is incredibly thorough, robust. It's amazing the things that they are able to do, the laboratory equipment they have. When we were at the Creation Evidence Museum with Dr. Thomas and Clay Turner, we filmed the entire process. We filmed them thin sectioning the bone, getting it under the microscope. And so what you did not see, and what the video started to kind of tee up at the end, is they were using a microscopic technique towards the end called cross polarization. Short form is X-pol. And what this does is it looks for something called birefringence. And so within bone, when you use the cross-polarized method, and Dr. Thomas explained it in the video, you have two polarizers and light can get through only in certain ways. And so light, if there is basically collagen present in a bone, the light will be bent a certain way and it'll be able to go through that second polarizer, the upper polarizer above the sample. And as you rotate on the microscope, as you rotate that sample, if it is collagen, that light should twist and change colors. And so the part that we didn't show in the video, and I'll save for the film, was they went further than just looking at the potential blood vessel, looking at the potential osteocytes. They actually did cross-polarization, looking to see, can we get a good indication that this is collagen? Because the only thing that twists light when using the X-pol method in that way, and we know this from studies that are looking at extant creatures that are alive today, we take their bones and look at that under the microscope. We know collagen is one of the only substances that can twist light in that way. And wow. So there's so much more to this than what we just showed you. But the point being is, again, we're wanting to cover this from all bases. We're wanting to be super thorough. We're wanting to show the creationists doing real science. We're wanting to show them in the laboratory. We're doing sit-down interviews. We're doing lab work. We're wanting to show how profound this evidence of soft tissue biomolecules is, show that these things are endogenous, that they are original to the creatures, that they are not contamination. And like I said before, we want to refute the evolutionary rescuing devices. And it is, you are asking somebody, you're pointing to something and saying, this does not fit your worldview. This does not fit evolutionary theory. This has the potential to completely erode the whole evolutionary timeline if people accept it. And that's the hard part. That's going to be the challenge, is getting them to accept it.
Yes, I do want to remind the audience that the type of microscopy and polarization, I did just a little bit of research. It doesn't take much. This is the type of evidence that is accepted in court. This isn't just in archaeology and in clinical papers. This is where they find biological material on things like bullets and walls and concrete, and they prove that this is where the body was. So this is real science. Amen,
yes,
brother.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's one thing. Oh, sorry, Fred, go ahead.
Well, what I really love about all of this with the dinosaurs, you know, the evolutionists, they hijacked dinosaurs. It became their number one, in my opinion, their number one talking point, their number one lure. I know for years, for 30 years, I reconciled dinosaurs with like God's pets for millions of years. I mean, because dinosaurs had that lure into me that they were millions of years. And they, you know, one of the things we mention in our book is they start with kids, with Dr. Seuss books. And this whole thing has backfired on the evolutionists big time because of all this stuff we're discovering and this documentary that I can't wait for this thing to come out. It looks so awesome. And the technology and just the increasingly finding more stuff, we're refuting their rescue devices. It's an ongoing thing, but it's just so cool. We're demolishing their number one talking point, their number one lure for millions of years.
Yes,
that's how I see it.
Fred, it was so effective, and I don't want to embarrass anyone, so I'm not going to name any names, but the evolutionary atheistic hijacking of dinosaurs was so effective that by the 1970s, when I was a little kid, there were people in my church group who wanted to say that dinosaurs never existed. It's all a lie. They've made it all up. Now, in 1970, whatever, we didn't have the evidence we have now, but that's how effective they had scared the Christians. And, well, there's no need to be afraid anymore. We can come out into the light, even into the polarized light, and we can show them what's really going on. The dinosaurs weren't a lie. They were just lying about them.
Yeah. You know what else we don't have to be afraid about, Doug, is the interesting fact of the week.
No, you don't have to be afraid. Yeah, I'm not afraid, Fred. I'm going to face it. I'm going to stick out my chin and raise up my head, and I welcome it, Fred. You bring it on.
All right, so here is the interesting fact of the week. In 2005, when Mary Schweitzer's team reported soft, flexible tissue from a T-Rex fossil, what unusual field problem helped lead to that discovery?
Okay, first of all, I want to apologize for implying it might have been the 1990s. It's just that everything seems so long ago, Fred. It was actually 2005. What interesting field problem. Can you repeat that led to the discovery?
Yeah. What unusual field problem helped lead to that discovery of Mary Schweitzer's?
Okay, it's not that I'm playing for time, Fred. It's that I'm... I'm thinking field problem, meaning that it wasn't the usual field problem.
How about I give you a multiple choice? Well, take a wild guess and I'll give you a quick multiple choice.
Oh, no. We don't do multiple choice. We're homeschoolers, Fred. We don't allow any of that stuff.
Doug is getting serious.
I'm going to say that what happened was there was one of the people in the field had run out of water and their canteen was empty, and there was some interesting exchange of fluids and water in the car. So I'm going to interrupt that answer. So that was as wild a guess. I was just going to keep saying things until I got something close to something right. Okay,
do you know what happened?
I do know what happened, and the reason I do is because we talked with Brian Thomas about this, because we're trying to cover the history of all this. It was that the bone they excavated was too big for the helicopter, it was too heavy for the helicopter, so they had to cut it and take it out in segments, and then they were able to, they looked at it in the lab after that.
So wild. All right, yes, and hey, wait. While the applause is still going, I just want people to know that I was aware that they cut the bone, but I never heard that story. Why? That is so cool.
You know, this is probably a good time to mention. So Ellen McHenry has a new book, The Story of Dinosaur Soft Tissue.
Yeah.
And so one of the things she covers is, you know, they were actually discovering this stuff before Mary Schweitzer, which I didn't know about. And so that book is now available at store.rsr.org. It's be a great thing, companion book to the list of not so old things. And it's really good. She also mentions Mark Armitage. I know that Mark and her worked together on this book, or she worked closely with Mark and osteocytes and things like that. And I want to get to Logan on this whole thing about osteocytes.
Yes.
Did I say that right?
Wait, before we get to osteocytes, Fred, is it possible since I was just flipping through Ellen's book. Maybe that's where I got the idea that there was something in the 1990s. Is that possible? Anyway, I'm going to buy a copy of the book, and I encourage everyone in the audience to buy a copy or two, one for you, one for a friend, and let's go back and find out exactly what was going on, because it's a really thin booklet, but it's just packed with really interesting behind-the-scenes information. From people who should know better, and they do, and we're glad Ellen wrote it. And it's only what? It's like $50, Fred. It's so cheap.
Yeah, I think that one's I think it's one of the less expensive books on our store.
It's easily worth $50 a copy, and we're letting it go for a lot less. So check it out on the store. It's definitely worth it. I'll go back and read it. Yes, osteocytes. Fred, I want to congratulate you on your outstanding pronunciation of the word osteous. Yes. Excellent. But what is that all about, Logan? And why would that be a big deal?
Oh, this is an exciting one. Okay. So osteocytes are bone cells. So if you're finding osteocytes in a dinosaur bone, and this is something that Dr. Kevin Anderson, the late Dr. Kevin Anderson, had pointed to, Dr. Mark Armitage, who you guys just mentioned, they had been pointing to this. It's something that is in the literature. It's something that we believe we saw in this T-Rex thin section. Osteocytes are cells. They are bone cells. And finding cells inside a dinosaur bone stretches the credulity of the evolutionary timeline, just in my opinion, beyond imagination, because you're finding actual cells. Now, obviously, they're dead cells. They're not alive anymore, but you're finding cells. How can dinosaur cells exist for millions of years? And so finding these osteocytes, so in the bone, there are these little compartments called lacunae, and in the clip you hear Clay Turner mention that. So in the lacunae, that is where the osteocyte essentially lives. It moves around, it works on the bone, it helps form bone. And when we were looking at these we were looking at this T-Rex thin section under the microscope there, we're seeing these lacunae that look like they have well-preserved osteocytes in them. And as Clay points out in the video, it looks like the filopodia, which are the little arms that come off the osteocytes, it looks like those are well preserved. And so Brian and Clay were blown away by just how many osteocytes are in here. The level of preservation, that was one thing that they remarked on. This is a T-Rex bone from Montana, right? This is something that has not been in a freezer and well preserved. You know, it's not like the thing is in liquid nitrogen. This thing is exposed to the elements. It's you know, close to the surface in some cases. There's groundwater that can come in there that speeds up the decay rate, speeds up the decay process, and yet we're finding potentially loads of osteocytes in this thing. That's just absolutely powerful. That is super powerful. And Clay and Brian, as scientists are and as they need to be, they were careful. They were saying, you know, we need to confirm this. The way we confirm this is by dissolving the bone, and then the cells would float out into the solution, and we'd be able to confirm from there via some other test that these are osteocytes. But we were looking at what looked like just loads of osteocytes within this T-Rex bone, which is just incredibly powerful. Because, I mean, as we know, it's these soft tissues, I know I've already said it, it's something you guys have said a whole bunch, they can only last for thousands of years. They cannot last for millions of years. Collagen, which is one of the things that we were just talking about, I was kind of teasing a little bit. Collagen is said to have a maximum shelf life under the most pristine conditions of 900,000 years. That's not even 1 million years, 900,000. And also, I can't share this entirely yet, but Brian led us on a little secret that's actually a little bit stretched. Whoa. The 900,000 is a little, has some assumptions built into it. Whoa. Some of the testing that's going on that we have to keep private for right now, I'll just say it this way. It shows that it is much less than 900,000 years.
All right, that's a wrap this week with Logan Keysweater here on Real Science Radio. We'll leave you with the osteocytes, the filopodia, and the drumbeat of the further disintegration of the evolutionary timeline. Join us next week for part two with Fred Williams, me, Doug McBurney, and Logan Keysweater.